It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Milwaukee police are grappling with increased reckless driving and traffic fatalities on city streets. We talked to a reporter about what city officials are calling an epidemic. First, the Trump administration held an opioid crisis summit today at the White House. The summit came on the heels of the Department of Justice announcing that it would support lawsuits brought by states and counties against opioid manufacturers yesterday. In 2016, more than 42,000 people died from opioid-related causes, according to the Centers for Disease Control. That same year in Wisconsin, the state estimates that 827 people died from overdoses. Our next guest is a doctor and has worked on opioid task forces in the past. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency physician at Gunderson Health System. Dr. Eberlein, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've talked about this issue before, Dr. Eberlein, and the president declared a national emergency late last year, a public health emergency due to the opioid crisis. What have you seen with the federal response to the opioid epidemic since then?
Well, they have been supportive of local responses to the epidemic. Today's statement went a lot farther than before, especially, I think, the thing that people had the biggest complaint about initially. There wasn't a lot of money tied to this problem initially, and it looks like that is starting to change now, because as we all know, you really can't fix anything in this country on this big of a spectrum without funds behind it.
What are some of the key funding priorities as you see it?
I think, well, we definitely need more law enforcement funding. You know, they are really feeling the stretch when you talk to our local law enforcement officers on combating the dealers and things like that. And then prevention and treatment are two huge ones, especially treatment. It's very difficult to get patients into treatment in a timely manner. And that's really frustrating for the patients, the families, and the providers when someone's ready to get treatment and you tell them it's, you know, a month out before you can get in. And sometimes then they don't even have funding, which it's just not a way that you're going to be able to solve this unless we have that part of it funded.
That it sounds like it would take a lot of resources to make that generally available, given the scope of addiction in this country. What do you have any sense of the kind of investment we're talking about here?
Well, we know it's going to be expensive to get timely treatment for patients, but part of that as well is realizing that not every patient needs an inpatient treatment either. We have to get to the point where we can get more support for our providers to figure out exactly where this patient sits and what would be the best means of treatment for them. And beyond treatment, that whole recovery phase, a lot of them get back into their own old habits when they return to joblessness and homelessness and things like that, get back to that same routine again, and it's too easy to jump back onto their addictive habits.
We mentioned lawsuits around the country targeting drug manufacturers. The Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Justice, says it will support those now. It's not joining in as a party quite yet anyway. What do you think of that development?
I'm not surprised by it. It's very analogous to when the federal government sued the cigarette manufacturers. But I think this is actually more on a broader scale. My opinion, I think there was quite a bit of misleading advertising and deception brought in by some of the drug companies on prescribing, on how safe these drugs were. I think there's a lot of misleading information on it. You know, when OxyContin first came out, we were told it was truly a non-addictive, less than 1% addictive properties to it, and we all know that's not true. And so, you know, we have to look at kind of the root cause of this, and with the cost that our country is looking at in fixing this problem, it does not surprise me at all that states and the federal government are looking to lawsuits to help cover the cost and get us out of the hole.
When we look at the causes of the opioid addiction crisis, it seems like there's a few different streams. There's those legally prescribed drugs. There's the completely illegal drugs, the heroin and other products. And then there's the legally prescribed and manufactured drugs that fell into the wrong hands, people they weren't prescribed for. When it comes to prescriptions that were legitimate from the outset, how big a part of the problem were those in creating this addiction problem?
It is a very big problem. We know that 80% of the addicts started off with prescription drugs, the vast majority of those being legitimate prescriptions. And when you talk to addicts, the same story kind of resonates, where it was a minor injury, post-operative pain. They were given these strong narcotic oral medications, and they became addicted to them in sometimes a very short period of time. We still don't have great evidence on who is at highest risk to become addicted to these medications. So it's something that goes through my mind every time you prescribe this. Is this someone, and I wish I had a better tool to predict if you're at higher risk than someone else. And there are some signs, if you have a history of addiction or family members that you can ask about, but it's still, you still don't have that great way to figure out who is at higher risk.
Talking to Dr. Chris Eberlein from the Gunderson Health System, looking at opioid addiction in the United States, a presidential summit on that issue today, lawsuits going on around the country. Dr. Eberlein, are we doing better? Is the medical profession doing better at restricting some of these prescriptions, being a little more careful about who these prescriptions go to?
I think that's for sure. In the last couple of years, we've seen a dramatic decrease in opiate prescribing. And part of it is education amongst the providers and use of the prescription drug monitoring programs, so you know where patients are getting the medications from. And those are two big key components. And now we're starting to look at alternative means to treat the patient's pain. None of us went into medicine to watch our patients suffer. And we need to look at better best practices to manage our patients' pain. It's going to be some integrative medicine techniques. Opiates will play a role at some point in some patients, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. There are patients it's appropriate for, but we need to figure out who it's appropriate for and what other modalities will help other patients.
To what extent, you mentioned law enforcement earlier. The president talked some today about harsher penalties for drug dealers. He's talked about border enforcement for, among other reasons, trying to stop the flow of drugs. How big a story is the law enforcement side of this?
I think it's going to be a fairly large component. Locally, at least in Wisconsin, other states, we're starting to see these incredibly powerful synthetic opiates come into our communities. Wisconsin's had, you know, I know they talked a lot about fentanyl in that summit, you know, the other drug that worries me as much, if not more, as a provider and someone who works with the first responders and law enforcement is carfentanil, which is 100 times more potent than fentanyl. And so the amounts of this drug that has to be brought into the country are minuscule that will overdose people. And just an example, they had that arrest out east where that dealer had 80 pounds of fentanyl in his trunk. Well, you would have needed less than a pound of carfentanil to overdose those 20 million people that he could with that 80 pounds. So it just tells you how dangerous some of these drugs are, and we really need to prevent some of these drugs from coming into our country.
Dr. Eberlein, when I've talked to first responders, police, fire, EMT, when I've talked to nurses and other healthcare workers, I keep hearing again and again, my job is different now. My job has changed over the last 10 years because of opioids and what I have to do. Are you feeling the same story there?
For sure. And I work closely with our EMTs, first responders, and police, and do training on to recognize overdoses and to treat it on scene and to watch. And now the scary thing for a lot of them is the inadvertent overdose of our providers from some of these drugs that are so potent that they get on their skin and their mouth when they're carrying or inhale off of a patient that they could overdose on. And that's a real concern for those that are out on the first lines trying to care for people.
And for people, this is among the heartbreaking stories I hear, people who have dealt with chronic pain, they're relying, they say, on opioid pain relievers. Maybe they're addicted, maybe they're not, but they don't know what happens if they stop. For people in their situation, what help is out there?
That is something that we have to do a better job with as far as getting these patients the pain relief that they deserve and they need. But limiting their dependence on opioids. And some of them are going to need some form of opioid. I think that is something that will probably still play a role in patients' pain. but there are other treatment modalities, and it's going to be a case-by-case basis, and getting them off of some of the short-acting opioids and getting them on to other medications that can help treat their pain is going to be something that's going to be a challenge for our medical providers, but something's going to have to be done.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Dr. Eberlein, a lot of bad news, obviously, in this story. Do you see signs of hope?
I do. A lot of it is just from the standpoint that we're talking about it. And people are realizing that there's not a single magic pill to take for this problem that we're facing. And it's going to be multifaceted, and it's going to involve all sorts of players in our society to get this fixed. It's not just law enforcement, not just the medical community. It's our whole society's got to rethink about how we approach this problem and to fix it.
Dr. Eberlein, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Health System. He joined us to talk about the Department of Justice decision to support state lawsuits against opioid manufacturers and the opioid summit that happened at the White House today. Milwaukee saw a dramatic spike in traffic fatalities in 2017. City officials blame reckless driving, calling it an epidemic, but there's no quick fix. Elliot Hughes joins us now. He reported on reckless driving in Milwaukee for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. Elliot, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
You write that Milwaukee police are calling this reckless driving an epidemic. A lot of people are talking about this, but start us off with the numbers. What are we seeing in terms of crashes and fatalities there?
Yeah, so the amount of calls police are receiving for reckless driving, the amount of injury crashes, and the amount of fatal crashes, they're all up since about 2010. 2010 is when you can start to see this phenomenon develop. Since 2010, the amount of police calls that have been received by the police department are up 136%. Injury crashes are up 26%. And from 1996 through 2013, you typically saw 30 to 40 people killed in car crashes. But the last couple of years have been pretty severe. In 2014, 49 people died. 2015, there were 64. 57 people in 2016 and 64 again last year. And those are levels not seen since sometime before 1996.
And you talked to some residents of areas that have been affected by this. They are very aware of this. This is a fact of life for them right now.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of people are upset. I know that there are groups of people who occasionally will picket the streets sometimes, just trying to get drivers to slow down. Some people are very worried about driving, you know, on Friday nights, Saturday nights. And a lot of people told me that, you know, if they're approaching an intersection and they have a green light, they will tense up a little bit about proceeding through that intersection, especially if they can't see the crossing streets as they approach. Because there have been some instances where cars will just fly through intersections, even though they have a red light. And crashes like that have killed people here in Milwaukee recently.
Yeah, let's talk more about the forms this reckless driving is taking. You just mentioned commonly people running red lights. What else are you seeing?
Just from myself, I've seen cars use bike lanes as passing lanes. I've seen speeding. I've seen people run stop signs. I'll see people treat a red light as if it were a stop sign, too, where they'll come to a stop and then go through if the coast is clear. And it is pretty common. I don't see it every day, but it is a little freaky. I myself tense up sometimes when I approach an intersection.
I understand police pursuit policy changed over the last few years and then changed again. Can you talk about what's been going on there and whether that's a factor in what's going on here?
Yeah, in 2010, the police department narrowed their pursuit policy to where cops can pursue a vehicle if the occupants of the vehicle or the vehicle itself, if there's probable cause that they were connected to a violent felony. That was in response to, there were several innocent bystanders who had been killed from police pursuits before that. So the change was in response to that, to try to cut down on innocent bystanders being killed, because police pursuits are regarded as one of the most dangerous events that a police officer can engage in. Since that time, a lot of people have criticized that policy. They thought that it communicated to the public that there were offenses for which you weren't likely to receive consequences. That if you ran a red light and a police officer tried to pull you over and you simply drove very fast and recklessly, that police officer would not pursue you. So there are a lot of people in Milwaukee who think that this has contributed to the reckless driving phenomenon that we're seeing right now. Last fall, the Fire and Police Commission here forced the police department to expand the instances in which police can pursue a car. Now police are allowed to pursue a vehicle if they are driving recklessly.
Apart from that change in pursuit policy, what has the police department done in response to this epidemic of reckless driving?
In the fall, they started this new strategy called the Surge. And what they did was they identified a little over 50 locations throughout the city that had a high confluence of violent crime, traffic offenses, and general disorder. And so they just poured police resources into those areas. They elevated the amount of police presence in those areas. And through the fall, the results were good. It's a small sample size. But the amount of tickets increased, the amount of traffic accidents decreased. But it's not clear if that's going to be a permanent part of the police's strategy going forward. The police chief who began this strategy, Edward Flynn, has since retired. Before his retirement, he wanted to fold this into the permanent plans of the police department. Since then, the interim police chief, Alfonso Morales, has said he's not convinced that the police surge is working, and he said that the surge is an ongoing discussion right now, so it's unclear if it's going to continue.
We're talking about reckless driving in Milwaukee. Elliot Hughes is with us from the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. And Elliot, in the piece you wrote on this, you looked at different theories about why this is happening, why it's happening now, and why it's happening in Milwaukee. What are some of the ideas that people are talking about?
The MPD pursuit policy is one that comes up often. A lot of people think that it's going to take a long time to re-educate the public about when an officer is going to pursue you now. But there's a few others. One of them is just youth culture. You know, there's this classic idea of when you're in high school, it's cool to have your own car and to drive around aimlessly. And some people think that idea has evolved to this idea of it's cool to steal a car and then drive with reckless abandon. And it's not clear how often teens are behind your average instance of reckless driving, but in 2016, half of the police pursuit subjects were 18 or younger. So it does seem like they do play quite a large role in this.
Milwaukee is kind of a standout here. Not every city is seeing this problem, but there are teens everywhere. So is there something unique about youth right now in Milwaukee?
That I don't know. Police Chief Edward Flynn did make a point of saying that there are other cities in the U.S. who had a similar pursuit policy that MPD did prior to this fall, before they expanded it. And those cities don't have this kind of reckless driving issue. And Milwaukee has a lot of issues. There are a lot of teens in Milwaukee who are disadvantaged, but there are a lot of teens who are disadvantaged in other U.S. cities too. So it's hard to pick out what exactly is unique about Milwaukee. There is this fact that driver's education is not as accessible as it used to be in Wisconsin, at least for low-income teens. The state stopped funding schools for that in 2004. Students had to pick up some of the costs when that happened. And now we're in a situation where 83% of black male teens in Milwaukee don't have a driver's license, and most low-income teens don't have one either. Milwaukee Public Schools is trying to do something about that. They've started a new program, but it's only available to 2,400 students, and they have a lot more students than that.
And Elliot, you mentioned earlier that people in communities that are affected are upset about this, concerned about this. What kind of neighborhood responses have you seen to try to tackle this?
A lot of neighborhoods have organized themselves. They do what's called block watch groups, where they'll meet maybe biweekly or monthly, and they'll just talk about what they've seen in their neighborhood. They'll talk about among other things, they'll talk about the traffic issues in their neighborhood. As I mentioned before, though, they'll picket certain intersections that have been major problems. But then also in October, you know, there was an instance where a 16-year-old boy was killed. He was thrown from the roof of a car. He was goofing around. And residents responded by holding a press conference the next day. There were about 40 people there. They got state representatives to come too. And they just, you know, they spent an hour in front of some cameras pleading to the public to just slow down and to just hold people accountable. And, you know, that press conference was interrupted by a driver who sped through an intersection that everyone was standing at. And police pursued the car, but they did not apprehend the driver that day.
I know it's only really a handful of months since the police surge you talked about in the fall. People are raising this issue. Are there any signs that things are maybe changing, maybe improving?
Yeah, since they've started the surge, the amount of tickets that the police have given out is higher. The amount of tickets they give out for instances of reckless driving was higher in 2017 than it was for the previous several years before that. But it's still a major problem in Milwaukee. There's still a large amount of injury crashes, and last year, you know, despite the fact that charges filed were up, there were still 64 people killed, which tied 2015 for the highest since at least 1996.
We'll leave it there, Elliot. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
That was Elliot Hughes. He reported on Milwaukee's growing reckless driving problem for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. Hollywood. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The 90th annual Academy Awards ceremony is this Sunday, and it's been quite a tumultuous year for Hollywood off the big screen. From controversies surrounding movie mogul Harvey Weinstein and many others to the politically charged atmosphere surrounding award shows leading up to this one, Sunday night's ceremony should be at the very least dramatic. And hey, there are some movies to talk about too. We want to hear from you. What are your Oscar predictions? What do you think was the best movie of last year or the best performance? Is there something you were kicking yourself for not seeing while it was still in theaters? Was there a movie that got left out unfairly? And are you going to host or attend an Oscars party on Sunday? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post your comments on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Reggie Ponder is back with us now, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for a bunch of other media outlets. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. That's R-E-E-L. Reggie, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, it's always good to be back on Central Time. How you doing?
I am good. How are you? You excited for the Oscars?
I'm really excited for the Oscars. A lot of people are talking about, you know, is this going to be one of those political ones? There's some surprises. There's some firsts. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to just be kind of excited about. So, yes, I am definitely excited about the Oscars.
Let's jump in right on the big award, Best Picture. A bunch of good movies in the running this year. What do you want to win? What do you think is going to win, if they're two different things?
Wow. So, Rob, firstly, I have to ask you, have you seen any of the, because I know you don't get out to see them all, but have you seen any of the Best Picture nominations?
I have seen a handful of them this time around. You know, talking to you, Reggie, it's gotten me more excited to see the movies. I've seen more, not all, but I've seen more of them this year.
Well, great. Well, I think the most significant film in the film Best Picture for me is Get Out. I love the political message, and I love how Peel was able to put this film in the horror genre and get people to come and watch a film that was about race relations but had such a twist about it, about some fears and some issues between the races. So I love what Jordan Peel did with this one, and I would like Get Out to win. If it doesn't win, what should win would be Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. That was a fantastic film. Maybe it has to, you know, this one has to be for people's taste, but I like that a lot. Some people think Darkest Hour might be the dark horse, excuse me.
Well, we've got bits and pieces of some of these movies and their trailers. Let's get a little sample from Get Out here.
Such a privilege to be able to experience another person's culture. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're going to love this. My dad's claim to fame was beat by Jesse Owens in the qualifying round for the Berlin Olympics in 1936. Those are the ones where...
Owens won in front of Hitler.
Yeah, what a moment. What a moment. I mean, Hitler's up there with all his perfect Aryan race bullshit. This black dude comes along, proves him wrong in front of the entire world. Amazing.
Tough break for your dad, though.
Yeah. He almost got over it. That's the basement. We had to seal it up. Some black mold down there.
That all gets creepier as it goes on. So Get Out, a social message, but it is a horror movie. This isn't the kind of thing, Reggie, we usually see on the best picture list, is it?
Absolutely. This is actually such a groundbreaking film in the way in which Peele brought this to the screen that I think that is one of the reasons that it is up for Best Picture. Now, you know, sometimes people say, oh, they just put it in there because they have 9 movies, but I think this one is absolutely deserving, and again, it was my Best Picture for the year.
And then you also mentioned 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Let's give a listen to that, and I think we've got Woody Harrelson and Frances McDormand in this bit.
Did it, Mrs. Hayes, but when the DNA don't match no one who's ever been arrested, and when the DNA don't match any other crime nationwide, and when there wasn't a single eyewitness from the time she left your house to the time we found her, well, right now, there ain't too much more we can do.
Could pull blood from every man and boy in this town over the age of 8.
Their civil rights laws prevents that, Mrs. Hayes. And what if he was just passing through town?
Pull blood from every man in the country, then.
Then what if he was just passing through the country?
If it was me, I'd start up a database. Every male baby that's born, stick him on it. And as soon as he'd done something wrong, cross-reference it, make 100% certain it was a correct match, then kill him.
Yeah, well, there's definitely civil rights laws prevents that.
So a bunch of performances people are talking about there. Talk about this one as Best Picture, though, Reggie.
Wow. From a Best Picture perspective, this film, firstly, the title in and of itself got a lot of people interested. Like, 3 billboards, what is that about? And for people who don't know what it's about, it's that Frances McDormand plays a mother whose daughter was killed and raped, and she doesn't feel that the police, which is Woody Harrelson, he's the police chief, that they're not doing enough about it. So she decides to take out 3 billboards to put some pressure on them. And in the words that she puts on the billboard, she changes them up and so on and so forth. And this is so well done, so well acted. The story is as captivating. And it is a little quirky in some ways, but McDermott is fantastic in this one.
I want to check out another one. This is another one that I have seen, Reggie. I saw Get Out at home, not at the theater. Let's give a listen to, this seems like a classic Oscar nominee type movie, The Post.
Well, since the way things worked, politicians and the press, they trusted each other so they could go to the same dinner party and drink cocktails and tell jokes while there was a war raging in Vietnam.
I don't know what we're talking about. I'm not protecting Lyndon.
No, you got his former Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, the man who commissioned this study. He's one of about a dozen party guests out on your
patio. I'm not protecting any of them. I'm protecting the paper.
So Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, major historical moment in American history. This, any other year, seems like it would be a top-flight Oscar contender, Reggie. Maybe not this year?
Yeah, I don't think this year, but I think it's so relevant, and that's probably why it's getting one of those nods, because it's relevant from trying to silence the press. It's relevant from the Me Too movement. Meryl Streep plays a woman who's running a newspaper, and you see some of the trials and tribulations that she has trying to do so. So I think it's relevant. Obviously, when you take these two people, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, I mean, you have a good movie. So it's very, very well acted, but I don't think that it'll be in the front running for this one this year.
We're talking to Reggie, the Real Critic, about the Oscar Awards coming up on Sunday, the nominees, his favorites, and maybe your favorites at 800-642-1234. We had a caller from Appleton who couldn't stay on the line, said he'd like to see Michael Shannon win Best Supporting Actor for The Shape of Water. I want to give a listen to another nominee. I think we have Octavia Spencer in this one up for Best Supporting Actress in this moment from The Shape of Water.
If you look at this... Some of the best minds in the country peeing all over the floor in this here facility. There's pee freckles on the ceiling now. How'd they get it up there? Just how big a target do they need, you figure? And get enough practice, that's for sure. Now, Brewster, no one's ever called him a great man, but even he manages to hit the can 7% of the time. Excuse us, sir.
No. That's all right. Go ahead. You ladies seem to be chatting enjoyably. Girl talk, no doubt. Don't mind me.
So The Shape of Water, I haven't seen this one, Reggie. Explain this movie to me.
So this is really a love affair with a human and a creature, a water creature. So some people liked it, and then some people are afraid of it because they think of bestiality, that type of thing. But this is phenomenally shot, looks wonderful on the screen. Some people think that this is going to be the winner. I was looking up some of the other critics, and this is a front runner for many critics, The Shape of Water. Looks great on the screen, and I don't want to give out any spoilers about what happens, but the whole thing is that the government finds this creature and tries to keep it secret. Someone else is trying to steal the creature, and somehow this maid has a relationship, develops a relationship with the creature, and it's very, very well done.
This one has a lot of nominations. Best Picture I'm looking at here, director, supporting actress, supporting actor, not Michael Shannon, Richard Jenkins, lead actress. This is one of those movies that if there's a trend here, this is one that could sweep a lot of stuff, right?
It could. I think that Del Toro will get the best director, and we hadn't gotten there, but I think he will get that, and that and that for Get Out, maybe Peele will get the consolation prize, which will be a screenplay. So,
talking about Oscar movies, the nominees, the likely winners with Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you going to watch? Are you going to have a party or go to a party to watch the Oscars? What movies do you want to see win? The Oscars this Sunday, the best movies of last year. What was your favorite performance of last year, nominated or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Reggie the Real Critic, also known as Reggie Ponder, is with us looking at the Oscar ceremony coming up on Sunday and the nominees. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite movie of 2017, the best performance? Is there something that you have just caught up on lately after all the Oscar hype? Did it live up to the hype if you went out and watched it or watched it at home? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've gotten a lot of action, Reggie, on the Facebook page. For best movie, Paula says Lady Bird. Joanna says Greatest Showman. I don't think that was up. Elaine says The Post. Lene says Shape of Water. And Jesse says Call Me By Your Name is a strong contender. Let's start with Call Me By Your Name and a listen to a clip from that.
Great.
That sounds different. Did you change it?
Well, I changed it a little bit.
Why?
I just played it the way Liszt would have played it if he'd altered Bach's version.
Play that again.
Play what again?
The thing you played outside.
Oh, you want me to play the thing I played outside?
Please.
Of course.
A lot of talk about this one, Call Me By Your Name, Reggie. Is it a contender?
It is a contender. I just think that it's on the outside, though. I think it's on the outside rail coming around a bit. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking horse racing. I think Call Me By Your Name is on the outside because there are so many good ones here. Rob, I think I told you this before, is that I always have a problem with this category because they put 9 in there. Really? Come on. Can't you just get 5 like you do everything else? So it makes it even that much more difficult because now you have to try to figure out what's the taste of that Oscar voter. But this is a fan favorite, and so we'll see. But I think maybe there's the top 4 for me would be 3 Billboards, Get Out, Darkest Hour and Shape of Water.
Let's give a listen. One of our listeners mentioned Lady Bird. This is another one that I did see in the theater, kind of on a whim. Here's a listen.
I wish I could live through something.
Aren't you?
Nope. The only exciting thing about 2002 is that it's a palindrome.
Okay, fine. Well, yours is the worst life of all, so you win.
Oh, so now you're mad?
No, it's just you're being ridiculous because you have a great life.
I'm sorry, I'm not perfect.
No one's asking you to be perfect. Just consider it would do.
I don't even want to go to school in this state anyway. I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
Your dad and I will barely be able to afford in-state tuition.
There are loans,
your brother, your very smart brother, he can't even find a job.
He and Shelley work. They have jobs.
They bag at the grocery store. That is not a career, and they went to Berkeley. Your father's company is laying off people right and left. Did you even know that? No, of course you don't, because you don't think about anybody but yourself.
Lady Bird, nominated for Best Movie, and Laurie Metcalf there, supporting actress. Saoirse Ronan, lead actress, nominees in that bit there, Reggie.
Yeah, so I had a little debate with one of my fellow critics yesterday about this one, and because this did not make my, Lady Bird did not make my top 10, and she felt that as a child that it really resonated with her and probably resonated with a lot of women who felt kind of out of place, were trying to look for how they fit in and where they needed to be. And I totally can understand that. It just didn't resonate with me. I think it was a fine movie, but it didn't make my top 10.
And one that made your list of likely contenders, I think, was Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. Here's Alyssa.
And before our forces are wiped out completely, now is the time to negotiate in order to obtain the best conditions possible. Hitler will not insist on outrageous terms. He will know his own weaknesses. He will be reasonable.
When will the lesson be learned? When will the lesson be learned? How many more dictators must be wooed, appeased? Good God, give any mixed privileges before we learn. You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth.
So Darkest Hour, you think, has a shot, and Gary Oldman, lead actor, as Winston Churchill, nominated as well.
Come on, you just heard it. He said you cannot wrestle with a tiger when your head is in its mouth. Oldman just did a phenomenal job here, and the only reason it's nominated is because of him. He was really good. He carried this film, and it was about him. So, I mean, he was playing Churchill, so he was really good in this film.
Talking to Reggie, the real critic, Reggie Ponder, about this Sunday's Oscar awards and the contenders for those awards. George from Racine called in, couldn't stay on the line. Nobody's staying on the line right now, Reggie. But George said Get Out is going to be remembered generations later as a groundbreaking film. Do you agree with him?
I totally agree, and that's one of the reasons that it is my vote, is that it has this, I'll make up a word there, a rewatchability, that you will watch it over again, you find different things in it each time, and it does address a issue that's current. I heard Jordan Peele talk at the African American Film Critics Association Awards a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the cotton which saved the main character played by Daniel Kaluuya was intentional, that he wanted the irony that he was saved by cotton. And I didn't even notice that until I watched it the third time, that it was cotton that saved him. So there's all these little things inside the movie that makes it where you want to watch it again.
And to George's point, do we sometimes give out our awards to movies that struck a chord this year? But, you know, history is going to look back differently. The movies that are going to stand out may not be the ones that got the award or even maybe got nominated.
Absolutely. There's a thing in Hollywood that you don't necessarily get the award for the one that you should have gotten it for, received it. And so this might be the case for Get Out, is that, hey, Jordan Peele, this is his first time, so he's nominated, we're happy, we gave him the consolation prize, but later on we'll look back on that film and say he was so good, so then he gets it for a film that might not be as terrific as a Get Out.
I want to peek in at one or two more movies and then get to some performances. Let's see. It'll be kind of a lightning round. The movie Phantom Thread. I know nothing about this movie, Reggie. What is it? It's up for Best Picture.
So of all the movies that were out here, you would ask me about the only one that I didn't see. I did not. Oh, man, Reggie didn't see this. Oops, I don't even want to say this on camera. I did not see Phantom Thread. So I really can't talk about it. And that messes you up a little bit when you're trying to vote, obviously, because I did not see Phantom Thread.
And one I know you did see and I did, too, was Dunkirk.
Yes. Oh. So this movie for Dunkirk is that the way in which they tell the story about these guys who are trying to get out of a bad situation because they're cornered. And in fact, this movie is referenced, or at least Dunkirk is referenced in The Darkest Hour as well, is they do it without a lot of dialogue, and that's what makes this so impressive. And then the war scenes are what you want war scenes to look like. They felt real. This was a really good movie. I just think that it ends up being up against some really tough competition, and it won't get the shine that it probably should.
All right, let's get your thoughts on a few categories here. Who do you have for lead actor?
So I have for lead actor, I think that Gary Oldman will win this one.
Okay, lead actress.
So for actress, I think that it's a foregone conclusion, and if she doesn't win, then there's a problem, and that would be McDermott. She would have to win this one. She's fantastic in this.
Frances McDormand in three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I mean, she's always good, right? You know you're going to get a good performance out of her.
But she's especially good in this one. And since you haven't seen it, I really recommend, Rob, that you see this film even after the Oscars. This is fantastic.
This is probably the movie that I haven't seen that I most want to see. Okay, supporting actor.
So for supporting actor, this one's tough, but my vote is William Dafoe. I did not like The Florida Project as a movie. It did not resonate with me. In fact, I got annoyed with certain things that was happening there. But William Dafoe made this movie palatable for me, and he was excellent in the way in which he showed humanity and helped that little community, because they were staying in a little hotel or motel, and he helped that whole community together. I hope he wins this one.
And then supporting actress.
So for supporting actress, a tough one. I think that Mary J. Blige does a really understated performance in Mudbound, but I think that Allison Janney will win. She looked, sounded, felt like Tanya Harding's mother, and she was really good. And I like Allison Janney as well.
And then director, did you say Jordan Peele for Get Out?
I don't think Jordan Peele will win it. That would be my choice, because I would go along with that with the best movie. But I think that Guillermo del Toro will win for The Shape of Water. This looks so wonderful on the big screen. And if you're trying to watch this one at home, I would recommend that it looks so much better checking this one out on the big screen.
All right, now I've got to go find an Oscar pool to get into with your advice, Reggie. We'll leave it there. Are you looking forward to enjoying the show?
I am definitely looking forward to enjoying the show. And, Rob, always fun to talk to you about the movies.
All right, thanks a lot. That's Reggie Ponder. He's also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago, and he critiques movies for other media outlets. He joined us to look at his predictions for the 90th Academy Awards show that's happening this Sunday. We've got some suggestions and picks over at the Ideas Network Facebook page, and you can head over there as well. What is your pick for the best movie of 2017? Make the case. Again, that's at the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Staying with the Oscar theme, all week we've been featuring some of the Oscar-nominated music, and today we're going to hear another nomination from the Best Original Song category. And you can still weigh in with your all-time favorite movie music, and that's soundtrack or song. You can do that at our call-in line, 833-424-3327. That's 833-424-3327, or check it out, it's 833-42-IDEAS. That's handy. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Today, we're going to listen to a song from the movie Mudbound. It's a film about race and poverty in the Jim Crow era South. It's sung by Mary J. Blige, who also received an Oscar nomination for her acting performance in the film. Here's Mighty River.